This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Well, we've been talking about it, the incident. And by the way, the White Sox just beat the Twins again, 2-1. The Twins, I mean, look at the season they're having. They're not going to have a chance to lose to the Yankees in the playoffs because they're not going to make the playoffs.
Nope.
Really shocking. Anyway, it's the talk of baseball right now, which isn't a bad thing. And whenever baseball could be in the main narrative, that's a good thing. But I'm not sure that it's sending out a great message. And I want to talk to the guy that, I'm telling you, I respect him more with his baseball take than anybody. Kind of learned the intricacies of the game from him, and that is he's with the MLB Network. He's with Yes Network as well. That's Buck Showalter. Buck, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How you doing today? Buck, how you doing?
Good.
There he is.
There he is. How you doing, Buck? Good?
Good. We on yet?
Yes,
there
we
you
are. We got Buck. Buck, you there?
Of course I am.
Okay. It sounds like you don't know if we're on. We're on. This is big now. Okay, here we go. I said this in the previous hour, Buck. Everybody's going to rip La Russa for unwritten rules, like saying that, you know, you shouldn't swing 3-0 with 15-4. And I think that Tony La Russa has so much equity, you know, he's in the Hall of Fame already, that he could just flip off everybody. You don't like the way I think, that's too bad. I think most managers think like this and don't have the guts to say it because they can't say it because that's not the way the game is supposed to be played now. Everybody's supposed to have fun. Am I close to being correct or not?
Somewhat. You know, Mike, we're all a product of our upbringing, whether it be your mom and dad, in baseball's the same way. You know, you were brought up a certain way in the game. It doesn't make them wrong and you right, and vice versa. You know, my criteria always was when something would happen on the field that back, you know, I'm very careful about ever saying back when I played and all that other stuff. Players don't want to hear it, but, and rightfully so, but I would look to the right down the dugout and see what reaction my players had. And if they didn't care, you know, you better care about the things that they care about. And, you know, we all know about Tony's resume as a manager. But I always try to keep in touch with what was going on with the players as far as, you know, you had a certain group that you meet with and you make sure you carried all groups, whether it be young, old, Latin. You know, it didn't matter. You had to make sure you brought everybody into play because we're all from different environments and different upbringings. But, you know, this is a subject I could talk about for a while, I've been faced with it too. And it's, you know, it's uncomfortable because, you know, you're trying to give your guys shortcuts to being good players, but you always want to make sure that you're telling them the right thing in today's game.
So in that situation, did Tony do the right thing for giving Mercedes the take sign, 3-0?
Well, you know, the biggest problem I have with the whole thing is just the disregard for signs.
Yeah.
You know, if he had some question about it, just look down and a yes or no. That's my biggest, you know, if you're going to, you know, I've had Yermin in a big league camp. I believe he's in there a little bit with Baltimore. He was with Washington. You know, he's had his challenges in the past. And, you know, sometimes I wish at a 10-run point after the seventh inning that we could all say, okay, do you want a seed and the game's over? You know, I've never seen so many position guys pitching in a game. It's not necessarily good for it. And then if you want to keep playing, it's an entertainment package. I don't know. But it's not good to have position players pitching, except if you're having batting practice. And I don't know. That was my biggest issue with the whole thing was just disregarding a sign or even not taking the time to look down there. A lot of times some guys won't look because they don't want to see the sign. I had a guy swing 3-0 in spring training against the Jim Leland club with the Orioles. We were up like 11 runs, and he was having a great spring. He was trying to make the club, and, you know, and he had a home run on a 3-0 pitch. And, you know, I sat down in my office after the game, and I tried to get to the essence of why he swung. You know, he's trying to make a club, okay? He's trying to impress with every pitch thrown to him. He's trying to – and probably down deep he knew that would be, you know, something that people would weigh in on, and some would think it was bad and some would think it was good. I think we all know what Jim Leland thought. And really just stop and take the essence of why Yermin swung and why did this guy swing for me. And, you know, I tried not to impose the way that I was brought up in the game necessarily, and I always tried to analyze it and really say, is it really, you know, right or wrong, or what's the essence of what drives it? It's a deep subject. It really is.
Now, I think it's debatable whether or not to give him the red light on 3-0. I don't think it's debatable about Mercedes ignoring the sign. I think he's dead wrong. But one of the things I don't understand that's happened in this, why is La Russa doubling down like this and saying things publicly when all of this stuff could have been handled behind the scenes with Mercedes? Now he's throwing his player under the bus and also advocating that he has no problem with the Twins throwing at his player. Do you find this a little odd that he's doing this?
Odd on the surface, yes. You know, there's nobody impacted the art of managing more than Tony has in the last 30 years. They're still doing things, but, you know, he's got his reasons. He's not just pulling it out of the air. And, you know, whether I agree with him or don't agree with him, or I would do the same, and, you know, for me, doesn't really figure into it. It just, there's a way that he chose to handle it, and, you know, that's his prerogative. You know, Mike, I was looking at something today where that's the first time in 20 years that someone has swung a 3-0 pitch up 10 runs or more.
Yeah, I saw that
stat. I went, wow. So I guess that makes everybody wrong. I don't know. But, you know, like Trevor Bauer's been brought up a certain way. You've been brought up a certain way. I have. And we've been exposed to certain things because authority figures told us that this was wrong, and we didn't do it. Yeah, and you know, you should question things through the years as how you improve and find better ways to do things. I love when people ask why we do something, our players, and I encouraged it from coaches and everybody. It's how we got better and found better ways to do things. But, you know, the entertainment value of the – I know the pitcher wasn't too happy, was he? Or the catcher or wherever. He's a DH. Well, he catches some too, doesn't he?
Yes.
But he didn't seem too happy. Has anybody asked him?
Well, he was cursing at Mercedes at the end of the game, and Mercedes just ignored him, so he wasn't happy.
Well, you know, I know Yermin a little bit. He was with us in Baltimore, and I got to tell you, I'm not real sure he really cares what the pitcher's all about.
Right. So, you know, a couple of years ago, the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred, came out and said, let the players play. You know, that means the bat flips and all of that. And fine, okay, I understand. You know, you're trying to attract a young audience. But, Buck, we've talked about this a lot on the show. It doesn't seem like that memo got to the players because there's a lot of players that don't like it. So either you're going to let them flip the bat with no ramifications, or you're going to allow players to get thrown at because there are pitchers that just don't like that act. So how do you reconcile that if you're baseball? You want the players to have fun, but there's a lot of players that don't appreciate it.
Well, Mike, you know, we're sitting here talking about it. First of all, you're talking about an entertainment package. You know, name three managers that are part of the entertainment package when you buy a ticket. I don't know how they would react to an argument. We've eliminated a lot of the arguments, but I don't know. It's about the players and what, you know, the players have some debate about it. Obviously, they do. You know, a lot of these things, they're not telling guys to throw at people. Their teammates may be doing it. You know, I don't see a pitching coach or manager. I haven't seen those guys do that. I'm sure there's some that have had. I didn't. But there were times where, I don't know, it's a subject that will be debated forever, and we all know we can spend 5 minutes with somebody and we'll know which side of it he's going to be on when you listen to the tone of which he approaches subjects like this. But just once again, you know, it's a player's game. You know, I thought it was interesting how Tony handled Yermin being late a couple of times to batting practice this year. I know one time he might have started, but he didn't. If you look at his narrative and his support of Yermin and the excuse that he gave him for being late, you know, it's completely different than this one. And I thought that was interesting.
Well, you said a couple of times it's a player's game, but to what end? I mean, you still have to have a pecking order. A manager should still be able to tell his player what to do. And if the manager is going to be neutered, especially in this day and age, then what authority are you going to have then?
Well, I think the evolution of the manager, you know, there's still – it depends. You know, authority figures are looked at differently nowadays, and sometimes rightfully so. It's – you better be ready, and I enjoyed answering why. You know, you better, when you're challenged on something, you better have good reasons. People may not agree with them, but at least you have good reasons for them. You should feel comfortable in sharing it, not saying, hey, I've been doing this for X amount of years, and I'm an authority figure, and how dare you, who've never played Major League Baseball, question me. That's not a good answer. You know, Tony explained how he felt. He didn't do it, you know, whether it was handled publicly the wrong way, I'll let you guys debate that. But, I'm careful about weighing in things that I wasn't there for. You know, there's a lot more to this, I think, than just swinging a 3-0 pitch.
That's, you know, whenever I hear unwritten rules, we're talking with Buck Showalter, I think back when you were managing the Yankees, and you remember this, I'm sure. I think it was the 7th or 8th inning. You're up by 5 or 6, and Pat Kelly steals second base. And Sparky Anderson screaming at you from across Tiger Stadium, screaming at you. And
it was earlier than that, Mike.
Okay, it was the fifth inning, I think. And
at Tiger Stadium, not that I remember it.
And he's yelling. And then they came back and beat you guys in extra innings. And even after the game, he still said that it was wrong. So, I mean, there are people that have firm beliefs.
Mike, let me tell you that the rest of that story. A week or two later, we were playing the Tigers at Yankee Stadium. And, you know, Sparky would have that hand in his back pocket, and he gives me those two fingers waving me over, young man, back when I was a young man. And he said, I just want to tell you, I kind of made an ass of myself there. And after thinking about it and everything, that I feel bad about that. I said, Sparky, it's okay. I knew what you were doing. You were a veteran manager trying to intimidate a young manager, knowing you had all those big, hairy guys that could score 5 runs in about 10 minutes, were trying to get me to shut it down in the 5th or 6th inning so that you could come back in the game, and you did. So I appreciate you telling me that. And he laughed so loud. He goes, well, you're right there, young man. Yeah, I knew what he was doing. He was trying to keep us from not letting Rob Deere and Parrish and Trammell and Whitaker and Chet Lim and all those guys come back and pound us. But I always remember that. You know, you'd like to have somebody have a flag over and go, okay, we're done. We're not going to try anymore, and the game's over. Yeah, can we just play the game? Let's play the game.
Is there
the
a number, Buck?
Is that playing the game?
Is there a number in your head in 2021? You have a lead in the 7th inning that you will call off the dogs. You will not steal bases. You will not go give a guy a green light on 3-0. Is there a number in your head?
No, Mike, I got to tell you no, because every situation is different. How's your bullpen? Do you have enough people to stem the tide? When are you playing tomorrow? Guys are trying to make a living. You know, that stat's going to count for Mercedes and arbitration, okay? You know, they're not going to throw it out because he hit it off a 49-mile-an-hour fastball, even though maybe they should. You know, I think each situation is different. You know, it's about, I don't know, I don't want to say shame, but, you know, we've eliminated the shame of striking out. And I just hope sometimes, you know, just if the players don't view it as poor sportsmanship, then who are we? You know, if the players and the fans don't view it as bad sportsmanship, then we got to step back and think about it. But, you know, it's a very competitive business by the best players in the world. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I would, and I'm sure Tony's had these conversations with his guys, veteran and young players alike. I'm sure he's talked to Tim Anderson, what he thinks about it. And at some point, you know, Tony's managed a lot of different type of personalities through the years. And I don't know. Last time I looked, I think the White Sox were in first place, weren't they?
Mm. Yep. Best winning percentage in the game.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Before we let you go, Buck, I wanted to get your take on Ohtani. What's more important, a starter who gives you 32 starts and pitches to that level, or a guy that can hit 50 home runs? What would you tell him to just do one thing?
Mike, I got to say, I've said this. You know, I hope for baseball's sake that he can continue to do it. I really do. Do I think it's going to have to be his idea if something changes? Mm-hmm. You know, because it was like that guy you tell to come play. We're going to let you play offense and defense, or we're going to let you play baseball and football in college. And then it always evolves into to one, and I think eventually it will. I know it's tough on Joe, I'm sure, or this guy gets hit with a pitch. Tough thing, he's a left-handed batter with his right arm, exposed. And, you know, he gets hit by a pitch or something happens. He may miss his work day throwing in a bullpen, or he may miss a start, and it throws the rest of the rotation into, you know, starting pitching so hard, you know, with everybody, especially the Angels. And so there are a lot of things you're challenged by, but that's easy. You know, if my challenge is Ohtani and the skills that he brings, and you welcome it, do I think it will evolve eventually into one or the other? Probably for the game of baseball. I hope it doesn't, because it's fun to watch.
Yeah, but what's more important to a team? A guy in there 155 times a year who has the ability to hit 50 home runs, or a great starter? What's more important?
Mike, that'll be debated for 100 years. The way the game is right now, it might be the starter. Because, you know, you're not, maybe the guy you replace him with hits 25 and drives in 90.
Right.
And the guy you replace him with as a starting pitcher is not going to do that. So I'd probably lean towards a starter. Personally, I think I know they've talked about it with him closing, where he basically DHs and is a closer, where you're constantly being able to use his skills late in the game and not losing him as a DH. There's a thought for you.
Mm. Not bad at all. Have you ever seen anybody with this skill set, Buck?
No. No. Some that I had no doubt that Ichiro could have pitched. You know, I really don't think he would have figured it out. He's probably thrown it between his legs. He may have been the most athletically talented guy maybe to ever play the game. But, no, he's special, and that's why people are so enamored with watching him. I just hope that he can continue to do it, because I do think it's great for the game. Will it continue over his career? I think that's going to be a challenge.
What's your take on load management?
See, Mike, I love the fact that you asked that question twice, but I didn't answer it right the first time. God bless you. I miss those days.
No, you didn't answer it at all. It's not that you didn't answer it right.
Well, that's not right.
God, I missed that. That's what I miss is a good writer that actually watches the game, and when I don't answer his question, he asks it again.
What's your thoughts on load management? Because I watch, like, players that are hot get rested, and then they end up getting hurt anyway. So my thought process would be, I'm going to keep playing them because they're going to get hurt anyway. So what do you think?
Mike, I was asked by a colleague of mine at MLB TV to do a thing yesterday where they matched up the 94 Yankees versus the 94 Expos and played a simulated, I think it's AI computerized game. I think that's artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And set the lineups. But looking at the rosters, it took like half an hour. It was nothing. And what hit me looking at the rosters was these guys, I think I had one guy that started the season that got hurt enough not to play a majority of the games. And I'm thinking to myself, what's going on here? Why were they able to play so many more games back then? And sometimes, you know, I was listening to Dan Plesac talk about his nephew last night. He said one of the issues he has with him is that he loves him as a pitcher, as a kid. He said he doesn't take any time off when the season's over. He starts training right away. And, you know, we're entrusting these guys and these bodies to people in the off season. And sometimes I'm wondering if we're conditioning for baseball. You know, they don't condition on dirt. We play the game on dirt. They do their conditioning on a treadmill or on grass. And then, you know, we still did our conditioning on the base pass. But, you know, that's a story for another day. But it kind of hits me, and I want to know why. Why are guys having so many quads?
I think we lost Buck.
He's back.
We just played through them. I don't want to say that guys back then were tougher and played with stuff. I don't think that was the case. It just seems like because of the training methods, which allowed him to do all these great things, throw harder and hit more home runs further, we're also paying a price with injuries. I don't know. I'd love to have, you know, some of the strength and fitness guys weigh in on it and tell me where that's not part of the culprit.
And also what's suffering, Buck, is offense. I mean, there was the fifth no-hitter last night.
It's like home runs. I was at MLB. I said, hey, let's do highlights tonight with no home runs. And they looked at me like I was nuts. I said, it's kind of boring, quite frankly. You know, if you were giving a run and a half for anything over 400 feet, it'd be different. But if I scrape the foul pole at Boston and I hit a ball 460 feet, it's the same run. But I just, you know, I don't want to minimize the no-hitter. But nowadays, there's a, what they call it, a no-hitter watch every night on highlights. I don't know if that's good or bad. When you, after a while, people are going to go ho-hum on a no-hitter. That can't be good.
Buck, the average, the Major League Baseball batting average is below what it was in 1968. I mean, something's got to give. It's not entertaining.
Well, Mike, this is one of those things that we all talk about. Everybody sees this as a problem. But what's the answer? You know, I've sat on a lot of these committees and people talk about the problems. Yeah, what's the answer? You know, that's why they do something where everybody, you know, maybe move the mound for the rubber back, maybe do this or do that. I don't know, but something, the way I had a friend of mine call me about, a scout called him from the California League game the other night. I think Inland Empire was playing Rancho Cucamonga or something. And 60-something percent of the outs in a three-game series were strikeouts. So don't act like this is just at the Major League level. And I think it goes back a little bit to how hitting's being taught. I really do. And don't blame the players. They're chasing what people want them to do and what pays the most. And, until you start getting penalized for striking out 150 times, there's not going to be a change. When you start rewarding contact, there'll be a change. What they say, follow the money trail. That's usually how it works.
Buck, can I ask you a question? I understand.
No.
All right.
Because when you start it like that, I'm going, uh-oh.
Never give them the option.
Well, here's the thing. Michael and I argue about this some. I'm not stupid. I understand why mentioning, velocity, exit velocity is of some relevance. But I feel like it's overstated, the level of importance. It's like, it's always existed. When players hit the ball harder, obviously you're knowing maybe if they're not putting balls in play, but they're closer to doing it, that's a positive thing. But do you think it's a term, an idea that's overdone these days or no?
Well, once again, follow the money trail. When they start off, hey, here's the so-and-so sponsorship of how was the exit velocity of that. Someone is sponsoring. Somebody's sponsoring, the velocity that somebody throws the ball in from the outfield and judging the arms. Was it accurate? I'm getting ready to do a show tomorrow on the, for lack of a better expression, the baseball combine they're going to have in North Carolina with the best prospects in the country next month. And, we were talking about it, and I told them, I said, I think the most important exercise of all this is going to be the conversation you have with a young man privately. I really do. You're going to be able to find out whether or not you should be able to find out whether you can trust him. It has nothing to do with exit velocity or arm strength from the hole. There's a lot of different things that go into being a winning player. And I just think that conversation you have with him to try to get a feel for his makeup and, whether you can trust him with a commitment is going to be paramount. And it's going to be a great exercise. We're trying to copy a little bit the football combine where they're going to have the best high school and college players there. It'll be a great look for everybody. It'll be a scout's paradise. But that conversation you have with the player privately is going to mean as much as, how much backspin can he put on a fastball.
Buck, we just got a quote from Lucas Giolito of the White Sox. He was asked if there's any negativity in the clubhouse following the La Russa Mercedes situation. He said, no negativity. We all support your mean. We love home runs here. That's it. We're going to move on.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What should he say?
You're right.
We can't stand our teammate. We support our manager and his, everybody. Mike, you imagine how boring it'd be if everybody was just some cookie cutter. Everybody's the same. But, your show would be tough because you wouldn't have anything to talk about. There's always going to be, different perspectives and different ways to look at it. I just challenge everybody to look at everybody's viewpoint, not only in baseball but in life in general. Don't be led around by one group of people telling you this is right and this is wrong. Think for yourself. We all come from different walks of life. He's been scratching and clawing. He's had a different upbringing. Tony's had a different way he's looked at things. And, we're all a byproduct of the environment we were brought up in. Thank God I was brought up in mine. Certain things weren't allowed in my household.
That I know. That's the person you become because of your dad and your mom. Anyway, thank you, Buck. As always, we appreciate your input.
Thanks, Mike. Y'all take care. Good luck to you.
All right, thanks. This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. Now, earlier, looked like Don's car was warming up in the winter when we talked about the Mets and their victory yesterday. So we're going to return to that, and hopefully we can really set Don off.
He was close.
He was close. He looked like he wanted to go. So, you know, you always have to revisit that because you have to be a responsible journalist and get the most out of, you know, the star of the show. And that's Don. I think you'd agree with that, Peter.
Well, of course. And it almost came out another time, too. He's been on the verge a couple times, so we could get him.
And we got one yesterday, too, so it's neat. Let's take a look at this day in Yankee history before we take a break. Brought to you by Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi. We go back to 1998, a great year in Yankee history, 114-50. After giving up an eighth-inning three-run home run to Bernie Williams, Armando Benitez nails Tino Martinez between the shoulder blades, igniting a bench-clearing brawl. Graham Lloyd races in from the Yankee bullpen to punch the O's closer, and Alan Mills bloodies Darryl Strawberry's face after the New York outfielder ends up in the Baltimore dugout, also trying to get a shot at Benitez. And Alan Mills actually was an amateur boxer who named his first son Tyson, so he could fight. That's This Day in Yankee History, brought to you by Woodbridge, a proud sponsor of the New York Yankees. Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, making classic wine for over 40 years. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you coming back with some Don thoughts on the Mets right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.